not unleash holy hell on them if they named you Thorin Smallwood?
Yes, I would. Oh, God. Hey, welcome to Friday, everybody. Game of Owns.
Game of the Owns. The Owns are flowing, actually, like wine this evening.
Literally 45 seconds ago, Eric and I were deliberating on a Skype whether or not to record because we may be recording a lot later than we had planned on previously recording.
It's the truth. No, and sometimes, you know, desperate times call for desperate measures, and these are those desperate measures. These are the voyages of the desperate measures enterprise that we were taking on this 5-year mission to do Game of Owns. So here we are. It's Friday, and the reason that we feel that we can be so quick and what's the word, down to earth about this episode. Well, it is Friday. Mm-hmm. But also because it's like also a 5-page chapter that we read.
Right.
Jon Snow, of course, we're speaking of.
How long was the audiobook?
15 minutes. And I was surprised, actually, that it was 15 minutes. But, you know, normal chapters are like 45, 60, especially the past few that we've had with Daenerys and Theon was an hour long.
Right.
15 minutes. Jon Snow is at White Tree, you know, with some members of the Wall. And really, that's it. They kind of are about to head out when the chapter ends. Nothing.
You know, this is our 126th episode.
You know, yesterday, or I should say Wednesday's episode, was a landmark, man. 1 1/4.
I know. 100. So now it's just Eric and I. I had some engine troubles. I feel like I need to explain this for one moment. So if there's people in the world that have warnings on their cars that say, warning, don't put in lower than this octane gas in their car. I don't care if you're by a farm community traveling or anything like I was. Don't put lower octane in. Just run out of gas and just sleep on the side of the road for 4 days until someone brings you higher octane fuel. Because later in your life, your engine will overheat and other people will suffer because of that.
Okay, so I've never known anybody who had to put higher octane gas in their car.
It's true. It sucks. And luckily, my transition is impending. Jon Snow and the rest of the folks that left the cozy keep on the Wall decided to trudge forward. And trudge is not a word, but I think that we just coined it in here. And yes, they're in
trudge.
This.
I think trudge. Trudge is a word. It has
trudge
to be.
Plus edge equals trudge. So they, you know, because when you edge forward, you scoot slowly. When you trudge, you're like sorrowful. So they're both sorrowful, cold, and going slowly. They're at this place called White Tree, which is a community of, well, I guess it used to be a community of wildlings, right?
Yeah, apparently. But I think from the beginning of the chapter, it says there are only 4 houses in it.
It's still a community. It's about like the place I'm in right now, kind of similar to it.
You're like, it's not all that different from the American Midwest, Eric.
No, it's true that the chickens overpopulate humans and also dogs put together.
I don't know what
place.
I would do if chickens overpopulated me, like in an area where I was.
Well, it's easy. You just gotta, just like on Zelda, chop open some bushes, look underneath them first, check for chickens, and then you would physically harm them until...
That is not the Zelda that I played, man. The Zelda that I played had to deal with, like, was it fiery bushes and a wizard who always wanted, an old lady with one tooth who always wanted to give me things.
Anyway, sorry, we're not making a Zelda podcast, but you guys get the idea. It's a dangerous place, and it's less dangerous when there's nobody there. Or is it more dangerous?
You know, you could almost, the tension was so thick, you could almost cut it with a dull butter knife, like the kind of knife that Sam uses on his PB&J sandwich.
It's true. And this place would have been, I think, a nice little stop, much like Craster's Keep, except hopefully since there's only 4 houses, I just feel like in a community such as this, quite possibly the wildlings wouldn't just attack the men of the Night's Watch. They wouldn't just attack them. I would like to think that, but I'm also not sure if the rangers north of the Wall would just attack them. Like, I don't really know the dichotomy there. They haven't really explained that too much. You know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean. And you're talking about if the wildlings had actually been there, sort of what would have happened, right?
Right. I just think, obviously it would have played out differently because in this chapter, we just see our party. They're literally checking everything out and they're having interior dialogue as well as to each other on ways this could have happened, like why they've gone, where they've gone.
But it's just eerie. I mean, I think there's a line in this chapter that the haunted forest never seemed more haunted. You know, this forest where they are north of the wall, they're going to these essential ghost towns or towns that have been evacuated. Even, you know, whatever small possessions the wildlings have, they took with them. All they're finding in these towns, these villages, including White Tree, are bones and ash.
You know, this reminds me, the chapter we literally just did on Monday. You know, we had Simone on Wednesday, but literally the chapter just before this was based in discovering a deserted town where people had just up and left. And now this is the next chapter.
I didn't
chapter.
Make that connection. You know, the connection that I made was that we were with Jorah Mormont and now we're with Commander Old Bear Mormont. What's his first name? Micah, do you know his first name?
Yeah, Micah's Zyre.
Yeah, he's
Gior.
What?
Mormont.
Holy sh-
I hope you're recording, good sir.
Me?
Yeah, are you recording?
God. Yes. Oh my. Okay. Okay. Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, Micah Tannenbaum has made a
walk away. And just think for a moment.
Micah Tannenbaum has made a surprise and ever so knowledgeable entrance into this Friday's episode of Game of Owns, everybody. Welcome, Micah.
Thanks. Anything that rhymes with Eeyore.
that's categorically the knowledge that you retain if it rhymes with Eeyore.
Pretty much, yeah.
That has to be this episode title.
It won't happen for about another 100 episodes.
Rhymes with Eeyore. There we are. I'm sorry, Zach. We pulled a fast one. I actually added him a little while ago, and then I knew that he would see us in the conversation and then be able to, because he just signed on. We didn't think you could make it tonight, Micah, so we're very, very grateful to. We love this. This is great. We got our regular three-panel minimum host that we prefer.
Listen, I love that you're here, Micah. I did not have Skype open. Like, I'm looking at my landing page on Safari because I was going to look something up really quickly. And it's Skype has been minimized for minutes now. We're recording the show and that just happened.
But no, I mean, Zach's comparison here where we had a deserted village as far east as any of our characters have been in the previous chapter with Danny. And now we have this deserted village that I think is interesting. Because it kind of heightens the threat in the east to that which is being experienced in the west. In the east, I just assumed it was some horse kings that were killing some people.
It's so funny you brought that up when you're talking about Commander Mormont, because the same situation is this. And this is a strange theory, and I'm not even going to define an exact theory, so take from this what you will. But, you know, like I said, we had a chapter just before this one where they were infiltrating a deserted town where no one was there. And they had lots of conversation about how did this happen? What were these people like? Where did they go? And this same conversation was had in a slightly more educated manner because they know the people that did live there in this chapter. Mm-hmm. But we did have Jorah, who was speaking down to Dany and giving her advice, offering her advice. And in this next chapter, we have Old Bear, who is speaking down to John and offering John advice.
I think it's a great parallel, or just a great, you know, synergy between the two chapters that you guys pointed out.
You almost wouldn't expect a chapter this short to mean almost anything. Like, it feels, because it's so short, they don't even necessarily go anywhere. They're just in this town. It's like George, like, had a deadline or had to meet, had to like fulfill, like, in case you're wondering what's happening north of the wall, here it is. And then on to more pressing matters that are happening elsewhere.
I made a note here though, and Eric, I feel like, or Zach, maybe you can dig deep into my mind and find out why I wrote it down, but
please.
You talked about the connection between this chapter and the previous one, but also there was a connection mentioned really between Old Bear and John. Something about telling lies.
Oh,
it was tied to the trees, though, right? I just feel like there's such a father-son relationship that exists between John and
Old Bear,
and maybe it's more of a mentor-mentee relationship, but
manatee.
It's a manatee relationship.
I don't know. Do they have those in Westeros?
Well, they probably do. There's lots of
manatees. Maybe in Blackwater before the incident.
Blackwater, you think?
Before the incident.
Yes, you're not allowed to ride your motorboat in Blackwater for fear of endangering the
flesh-eating manatees.
What is that called? wake speed? You just have to keep that to a minimum. Well, I think, Micah, I think you're right. And there are a few reasons that I could draw. There's just a few parallels I could, or comparisons I could draw right now. John has Old Bear's son's sword is the thing. You know, that sword that he's got, Longclaw, is it? Was supposed to be for Jorah. And instead, John has it. So there's that. And not to mention that John is the one who says, I think it is John who says that, you know, my father believed that no man could tell a lie in front of a tree, meaning a weirwood tree like this one, which is very holy. And Jorah said, Gior said, my father believed that as well. So there's that similarity in which these are both men from the north. We know now that Gior is from Bear Island, which is also in the north, just like Westeros, and has the same gods as Ned Stark worshipped. So there's that northern sensibility that they both share, whereas other men on the wall may be from the south. They may actually have known warmth at one point in their lives, which sucks for them. These are two very similar men, and they could be father and son. And the fact that if you want to view Old Bear as being, you know, as the Lord Commander, as being everyone's father on the wall, then there's also that comparison.
He would probably get mad if you drew that comparison, but yeah, he'd be like, no,
I don't father these. But well, because there's not much compassion. They're just surviving. It's not really like tenderness necessarily. Unless you count some of that, I mean, there's still room for comedy, I want to say, or lightheartedness. I mean, Jorah thinks that what Sam is doing to the ravens, for instance, making them learn words, is ridiculous.
You called him Jorah again.
did I call him Jorah? You know what? Jorah, it's too close. Old Bear thinks that what Sam is doing with the ravens is ridiculous. And he says that even if you teach ravens to talk, they'll never say anything worthwhile. How does he know? But so there's a little bit of light comedy.
He's got a raven that never shuts up, so I think that influences
card, old tree.
We're very honored to have this guest on our Friday episode. It's Old Bear's raven.
Card, old.
I don't have anything more interesting to say.
Somebody get this bird some old corn.
I still can't
believe
you just showed up out of nowhere. Go ahead.
Sorry. No. I think I'm starting to remember just what I wrote down there, because it's a comfort level for John, though, too, knowing that somebody is similar to him in a way. The fact that Old Bear had his father tell him the same thing that Ned told John about these trees and about being dishonest in front of them. It's just a familiar tie back for him.
Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things where you could immediately disprove it on the spot if you were so inclined. I mean, these are holy men. They wish to believe that that is true. But John could just as well say, like, I'm a hot redheaded blonde female in front of that tree. And if the words left his mouth, you'd be able to know that, you know, it weren't in fact true. It's something you could disprove right away. But, you know, it's just one of those things that adds a mysticism and a level of just kind of religion and theology to it. It's super important. And they're in a sort of hallowed place right now. And the fact that it's deserted just adds not only to the creeper effect, but it gives the sense of foreboding, which I was just mentioning earlier, too, that these wildlings, whoever they were that lived here north of the wall in this town, which, you know, whose name, by the way, they found on one of Sam's old maps, these wildlings left and they took everything with them. And people don't know why. The Rangers are still not quite sure, but John knows because he's seen the white, and so has Old Bear. You know, they realize that these wildlings, and I think it's not difficult for any of them to assume, they're leaving because the White Walkers are coming and coming back or coming to them, or they're in danger.
It's not cool that they're carrying that dude's head around in a burlap sack.
No, not at all. It's burlap.
Well, you know, sometimes, Micah, you just need a guy to wink at you.
I think that they left the village because they were going to join up with Mance. I mean, it's not really said, but there's a few reasons why they could have left. I mean, they could be scared of something. It could be getting way too cold, or they could be all joining together and making an army.
Yeah, I mean, either they fled because there was imminent danger to them as a result of a huge White Walker population coming towards them, or Mance is rallying the troops.
Called the banners.
Called the banners, essentially.
Well, where are our four goes, from White Tree?
Yeah. If you four don't show up next at the reunion, I'm going to be very upset, he said to them at the last reunion. Well, this is weird because it's one step further than Brotherhood without banners, right? These are wildlings. They don't even have a civilization, necessarily. But he called them. And they're going to gather and eventually try and get to the other side of the wall.
Just looking at these two together, I can't get over how many Danny John parallel theories I've heard just throughout the course of recording this show. And it doesn't mean that they have to be kin in any way. It doesn't mean that they even have to meet each other. But what it is doing is George is clearly inputting that these two Mormonts are eldering, if that's a word. They're eldering these two people that are out of water. I don't want to say fish out of water because they're not necessarily fish out of water. That would be strange. But John is north of the wall. John has taken the black. He's a man of the wall now. He's a man of the Night's Watch. And Danny is, you know, stranded way far east in the desert trying to figure shit out while mustering her own army and dealing with all the bad stuff that's happened to her. I'm just saying that they're both in sort of desolate, juxtaposed weather situations, you know, and the same sort of things are happening. And it's so interesting that this is how he decided to tell this part of the story. And it makes me curious and almost just blatantly obvious to the fact that not only does Danny have a great future ahead of her, and I also think that John has some destiny just basing off of what he's showing us here.
It's the hair, isn't it?
It is. They both have gorgeous locks. I forgot to mention that. He stands in front of the heart tree and he's like, my hair is ugly.
That would be rough for Sam. I don't know what he would do.
Well, you know, the first word that he taught his ravens was snow. Can we just pour one out for that affection that was shown to John right then and there? I mean, he says, I've taught some of them to say snow. And John's like, okay, that's kind of creepy, dude. Give me space. But he's also
cool,
like,
Sam.
Yeah. I think he's flattered, but it's just weird. It's a little weird to teach ravens to say snow. Why would they need to say snow?
There's a lot of snow everywhere.
Well, that's right. The thing is, snow up there means death too, apparently. So it doesn't just mean bastard boy. It means winter's coming, bitches. So I don't know. It's just a weird word to teach them. I don't know how Sam chose to teach them that word in particular, but I saw it as a sign of affection for John.
Yeah, probably. Yes, that's the more important word though, because that means food.
Right.
But I just like how also the religious aspect or the mystical element is building in these last couple of chapters. You know, listening to Monday's episode, you guys talked a little bit about Pyat Pree showing up in that
Mr.
chapter.
Mr. Blue Lips.
Yes. So you have that. You have what's taking place now beyond the wall. And even going back a couple of chapters, looking at Theon and the Drowned God and talking before that about Melisandre and you know, this whole Red Priestess cult that exists. You know, they're building another dimension, or I should say George is building another dimension to this entire story. It's not just about the battle that's taking place between the Starks and the Lannisters anymore. It's expanded far beyond that at this point.
It's like going from saving your life to being worried about saving your life to being worried about saving your soul. It's just like one step further into the depths of.
Are there Dementors? Is that what
that's
maybe?
Maybe
I just mean religiously. You know, we find these religion has a very uniquely prominent role in some of these people's lives, especially Melisandre, as you brought up. But this weirwood tree, which is, I think, 8 feet in diameter, is, I think, what it is said, is this huge symbol of a time long past. And I think Gior, Old Bear, says that.
God, I hope that's being pronounced right.
Well, anyway, I was just thinking of the young Prince George, who was born just a few days ago. Old Bear mentions the Children of the Forest.
Treehouse.
And it was said that they could speak to the dead. And actually, there's a great line in here. I wish I could remember who said it. I think I wrote it down, about if dead men could speak, who's to say they wouldn't be just as dishonest as living men? Great line. And this chapter, even though it was so short, was
that Dolores Ed?
Yeah, I think it was Dolores Ed.
I call him Dolores.
Dolores. him. I think it was Dolores Ed. And
was that the audiobook hymns that you just did?
Yeah, that was him. We could insert it in the show, but it would be a waste of time trying to source it. But no. So you know, I think this chapter, even though it was short, was very enjoyable. And you're right, it had a lot of overtones, and it connected really well with the other chapters, which in ways I didn't expect first or second time I even listening.
Particularly here, I think what we get to see of John and Sam's interaction is that, you know, there's a lot of fear around the camp, and everyone's kind of lost a bit of morale. You know, they started out joking, having a good time, trading old football stories, but now everyone's scared and everyone's just getting a little bit more freaked out about everything, especially with this shit happening. But when he speaks to Sam, Sam's like, nah, I've just been working on my maps. Like, I figure if I made it past the first few days and things didn't really get crazy, he's like, well, how much worse could it be? You know, we're just doing this thing and this is what we're going to do. So we might as well enjoy it. And John's like, damn, the person that admits he's a coward, because he did in like the sentence before that, he's like, I may be a craven, but I'm not stupid. The guy who admits he's a coward in a whole party of people that are just men, you know, he is the only one that is not really bothered by all of this. And I just think that yet again, George is just telling us, like, study guys, eat your witties and be strong people. And, you know, this is the kind of person he's saying is good in this particular situation, which is dangerous. So that's interesting.
Yeah, I agree. And Sam holds out his hand and says, John, look at my hand. It, like, for just to show him that it's not shaking. You know, this is pretty, it's a visual chapter, of course. But you're right. And I think Sam, you know, all these men are trained to be warriors, and they're sent out to find these wildling camps, and they don't, I think they'd prefer to be fighting wildlings and fighting to the death and having action. You know, it really just unnerves them to no end to find houses like the one in, or the four in White Tree, that are empty and deserted and have been long since, or, you know, a little distantly, abandoned. And that's what's really getting to them, is that they're not finding anybody. And it's really, even the game has left, even the animals. Ghost, Jon Snow's direwolf, is not having much more luck at finding things to eat than the men are. And that's really what bothers them, is it is super eerie to see literally no habitation where there used to be. There's clearly a sign of an advanced culture. There's, you know, houses underneath this tree, but no animals or people are in sight besides them, and that just gets to them.
Yeah, and you don't want hungry wolves. That's not good.
I know, the wolf and the bear.
If Ghost ate Chet in this chapter, that would be my own of this chapter. Unfortunately, he did not. So it will have to go to Samuel Tarly for training the bird to say words. That's cool, because it's a raven. It's not quite a parrot. Maybe that's their version. Maybe ravens do say words and stuff. That's cool. I've never had a pet raven. But if I did, I would probably get him to say stuff like, card! And
Chip!
And also for daydreaming about flying away on the bird. He goes, I wish the bird would carry me back to the roost. So that's not going to happen, Sam. At least not until like book five, sir. And they've discovered some potions. So yes, Sam, you get my own of the chapter, sir.
Because you're so nice.
You were the standout for me. Do you have an own?
I do.
Okay, let's hear it.
I really thought that moment where John was thinking about Arya was an own moment. He was talking about having the opportunity to muss up her hair again and not knowing if he would have the chance.
Oh, we got some real brotherly or half-brotherly love from Jon Snow. I agree. I think that's an own moment.
It is. Yeah.
And I would give my own. To Eric, you brought it up before, but just the courage side of Sam and the fact that despite everything that's going wrong, Sam still seems to be that character who, you know, he's realistic, you know, even though he probably should be shitting his pants right now, and who knows, maybe he is, you know, he's calmed down quite a bit. And I think that that's an interesting character trait that George is bringing forward about him.
He's a tough dude. He is.
Yeah. And my own, I was going to give it to the White Tree. Because it does completely cover the village that it's over or surrounding. But I'm going to skip that and give it to an even further inanimate object. The letter, and trees are animate because they're alive at least. The letter that gets sent to Aemon. No, bear with me here.
I'm bearing.
Okay, you're bearing. Old Bear. Speaking of bearing. I'm bearing right now. Old Bear
starting
has,
with my shoes.
Old Bear has John send an update as to where they are. You know, we're at the fourth village. It's blank. Da 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 da. Gets John to send this letter to Meister Aemon. Isn't Meister Aemon blind?
Yes.
He is.
So the letter is going to own him upon its arrival. I'm just
saying. He wrote it in Braille.
Don't you think he's got somebody back at the wall to read it to him?
I'm just, what's the point of writing a letter? Why not address it to the squire of Meister Aemon?
Wow, that's just rough, Eric. Come on.
I see your point, but come on.
I, of course, mean no offense. I'll take it back and give it to the tree. I mean no offense to any of our sight-impaired listeners. I really don't mean any offense.
You know, the fact that they did build all the houses underneath the tree, like, this is where I want to live. Like, that was something that I would have wanted when I was a kid, and lucky for me, that's still what I want now. So it hasn't changed much since then. Tree houses, houses under a tree, hollowed out trees, a house. Hell, I'll take it all. Whatever.
You know, I'm surprised that Giant didn't find any houses up there when he was climbing that tree.
He didn't look hard enough.
Yeah, clearly. I bet there are tree houses in there.
Can I give a additional own, though? Just really briefly.
I don't know. Your alter ego also gave an own. I don't know. We don't have enough people here.
Who's my alter ego?
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about, Eric.
Okay.
Selena?
Yeah.
Sorry. Don't ruin the secret, Micah, please.
So I was just going to give an own to Benjen Stark for showing up yet again in a chapter and making people think that perhaps he will have some sort of relevance at some point in this book. Or series, for that matter. And then also Corrin Halfhand.
He did get a mention.
He did.
Conversations.
And if you would like to begin one with us, there are many ways to do so. Your own oriented conversations will be spoken about now.
Yes, of course. Well, we've got...
I got one here. It is from, well, depending on how you'd like to read this Twitter name, it's either P. Louisa or Pluiza. What do you think?
Pluiza.
Yes.
Okay. Pluiza's cool. Yeah, go with that.
She writes in and says, Chapter John 2. I like how she did that. The Heart Tree owned the village and the crows. Neither a funeral pyre or Thorin Smallwood's axe could touch it.
It's true.
It is true.
It is very true.
Names to consider for the royal baby. Okay, so we got some non-owned tweets here we're going to share right now. Letty Nardone says names to consider for the royal baby. Ned, Rob, John. Names not in the running. Theon, Tyrion, Joffrey. Okay.
Why wouldn't Tyrion be in the running?
I don't know. This person doesn't like Tyrion.
That's not cool.
Everybody send Letty, which is Twitter at Letty Librarian, some hate tweets for not allowing Tyrion to be in the run. No, I'm kidding. I have profound respect for librarians.
And Ned, Rob, and John. Well, should we break the news? You talked about it earlier in the episode, Eric. I don't think any of those names made the cut, unfortunately.
No, each one of those names is better than the name, I think, that was chosen, which was, is it George Lewis Alexander of Cambridge?
I think it's George Alexander Lewis, isn't it?
Of Cambridge. Of George Alexander Lewis. No relation to...
Of Cambridge.
Yeah, no relation to George Louis Costanza, apparently.
Well, that's good to know.
This is just tweets.
Jason Alexander, who played him.
Yeah, you can't make this stuff up. Twitter is just blowing up with this.
Well, we're sad to see that Ned, John, or any of those other names were not utilized. Perhaps he will play one of Robert's bastards in the upcoming season 4.
Wow.
I wasn't sure the baby was born yet, so it is born now.
It is.
It's born, it's alive.
It is alive.
Well, there was something I asked everybody about on Monday that I was afraid everyone was just going to laugh at and make fun of me for because I'm kind of a geek, but you didn't. Some people wrote back in, and the rest of you laughed silence, and Atomic, Atomics, excuse me, that's a soft X, wrote in on Winter's Coming on some of the comments. He said, I imagine the father playing like a cross between a Pally and a Hunter, so I'd rock the father as a main range DPS the father provides, no tank for me, but maiden off equals tank, so that would be a solid secondary to the Smith for an alt. So that, if anyone understood what that just said, I completely did. Very cool. Another person on Twitter that wrote in, Daniel K.
What just happened?
Yes. He says, my MMO character would be a dual spec stranger, okay, Eric, with the warrior. So that means pure death, equals pure death. So nobody can tell me not today. Love the podcast. Now that is interesting. Stranger and warrior could be good. I think so.
Yeah, I really do want to see these other gods making an appearance in the books. We haven't yet. You know, I mean, there's still time. There are 5 books left.
And then Shane Epps wrote on Twitter, he said, totally had to stop the episode because I need to tweet y'all to say what I... to say that I will definitely be crone class.
Can I say though, Zach, I really liked your idea for this video game, and I think it should happen right away.
How cool would that be, right?
That'd be very cool.
That'd be so interesting and stuff. Maybe that's whatever. So yeah, that was something. And
can I write into his.co and see what your recommendations are for a Game of Thrones video game and see if that progresses beyond.
It'd be a very similar answer.
Well, I got a tweet too. I do want to bring this up. It is goo related. And this is the person I mentioned on the Theon episode that there was somebody who offended me with a reply to my announcement that I had written an essay. The actual tweet was, can it you tool? That I received from...
is that their username?
No. And they wrote me back earlier today. This is the follow-up tweet from Nedro, who had previously said, can it you tool? So I'm a little behind and just listened to your Theon bit. I didn't dislike it. And then there was a follow-up tweet. I do find it interesting, however, that you feel compelled to defend him. By the way, thanks for the shout out. So.
Well, actually, I defended him somewhat in that episode.
I think we all defended Theon somewhat.
I wasn't in that episode. Yeah. I just raised my hand like I was in school.
You're clean. You're untainted, Zach.
Okay.
No, it's
I
true.
Didn't even have to edit it.
You do not have defending Theon blood on your hands, Zach, so you can feel good about it. But no, I think that if you somehow skipped over that episode, and we've talked about this before, even though it's titled Everybody Hates Theon, it's actually a lot about a loving Theon. And, Just listen. It's good character discussion on the part of Selena, myself, and Zach, who couldn't make it, and Micah.
Yeah, I did great in that episode.
You did
guys.
Excellent.
Thank you. Well, we've been drawing.
You were the best
bit.
Panelist. Yeah.
Thank you. About Twitter, because it's Friday and it has gotten kind of late. So this is one of those moments where we go, all right, boys, what do we do now? And then we tell you to send us those tweets because that is like blood, and blood carries all of the things that we need to survive. So keep our vascular system a moving and send us tweets and emails because we do this literally. We literally do this for you. That is the truth.
Three times
a
week.
The 100% truth. Three times a week.
You are the lifeblood of this show. You're continually sending owns. Because look, we can tell you what owns, but you can also tell us what owns. And which would you prefer, really?
Yeah, the beautiful thing about this whole show is none of us are scholars on owns, and some of you may be. So send us those, and we'll consider everything.
Yes, if any of you have an MBA on owns in ownology, just let us know, and you can be on the show. So again, Zach mentioned the Twitter. That's twitter.com/gameofowns @gameofowns on Twitter. We're on Facebook, facebook.com/gameofowns. You can write on our wall. We sometimes go on there. We sometimes don't. It's a bit of a journey for us.
Sam patrols, though, so you might run into him.
Sam patrols the wall fairly often, fairly frequently, I should say. And you can email us. Our email address is contact@gameofowns.com. That's where we want you to send your longer format responses, rebuttals, comments, anything you think of whatsoever that you think would be
love letters.
Love letters.
That's the ones I want to read, guys.
Wedding requests, marriage requests.
Reading requests, too.
We heard that Benedict Cumberbatch is doing bat mitzvahs. We also do bat mitzvahs. You just have to email in and ask us.
Yeah.
It is true. And another way that you all can connect with us is on iTunes, where you most likely downloaded the show. And if you didn't and you happen to be listening to it on GameOfOwns.com or WinnerIsComing.net, just head on over to iTunes, why don't you, and give us some of your feedback. There's a nice little bar there which has 5 stars, and you can make them all light up like a downsized menorah on Hanukkah.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that you do that is just by selecting 5 stars.
Pressing.
I just thought of something. Seriously, Micah, the white tree lit up like a Christmas what? Tree. How cool would that be?
Well, we will have to talk to iTunes about getting that added as a new feature. Yeah,
maybe.
Well, I mean, it would trump Rockefeller Center, seriously, if white tree in the books could be lit up like a Christmas tree.
Well, it could be the Rockefeller Center of
North
Beyond
of the,
wall.
Yeah,
yes.
That's true. That's true.
But with far less people showing up each
and no,
year.
And no camel petting zoos, right? Was that at Rockefeller that you saw? Was it?
Well, we thought this episode was going to be 10 minutes long, too.
It's not a petting zoo. These are camels who are hard-pressed for good money, and they sell themselves to Radio City Music Hall every fall and winter to appear in the Radio City Christmas Spectacular. And it's actually Winter Coo's company that goes and gets these camels hired.
Humps and Bumps Entertainment, right? That's
Humps
the name
and
of it.
Bumps Entertainment is right. I think Winter Coo will actually appreciate you, putting out the name of his company.
Second
on the show.
Sponsor of the show, yeah. Humps and Bumps Entertainment.
Today's episode is brought to you by Humps and Bumps.
What day is it? What day is?
It's not what you think it is. It's actually a camel employment company.
So rate us 5 stars and support camels everywhere, especially Rockefeller Center during the cold winter months. Winter Coo will thank you.
And please,
yes, he will.
For the love of all things and the light of the seven, will you please have a bodaciously great weekend and watch Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure?
What about Bogus Journey?
I mentioned iTunes earlier, but this review that we received just really, really, it blew my mind. So I wanted to share it with you. It's from Game of Thrones fan 39. So I'm glad that number 39 wrote in.
Yep.
Where are the other 38? Seriously.
He or she, or maybe both, said with the headline, "Can't stop listening. Great podcast." Uh-huh. So I just thought sometimes it's simplicity, you know, this listener, would know how to, do this chapter episode in 15 minutes or less.
Something
we can learn. Something we could all take with
so
us.
So enjoy your weekend succinctly or 3 times a week.
Hey, we're starting with Arya. That's all I know.
So send us your future owns, your phones. Send us all your phones.
Send
I'm
us
Zach
your phones.
Chloe.
I'm Eric Skull.
And I'm Micah Tannenbaum. And don't forget, visit www.humpsandbumps.com. Only if you're 18 years of age or older.
Support the camels.
Please don't visit that link.
I'm sure it's a thing. We have to...
It's actually speedbumpsandhumps.com. It redirects.
Oh, weird. That's awkward. That's really awkward.
What about Humps and Bumps? Let's see.
So that's what Black Eyed Peas was singing about.
Nope, that directs there too. So we're done, right? I can stop recording.
I tried co.uk. That nothing.
I wouldn't Google search humpsandbumps.com.
Dude, you can buy speed bumps online.
It's okay.
This changes everything!